हरे कृष्ण। इन वृंदावन द सेलिब्रेशन ऑफ पुष्याभिषेक इज टेकिंग प्लेस। द परफेक्शन ऑफ आवर स्पिरिचुअल लाइव्स is keeping the pleasure of Krishna as our singular goal in all of our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. Bhagavatam describes that Krishna is like the root of tree. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam prapartite. He is the source of everything. When Krishna is satisfied, all of our spiritual desires are perfectly fulfilled. If we are these material bodies, then spirituality makes no sense. And if we are eternal souls, then material enjoyment makes no sense. The body is ever changing. The body is destined to grow old, get diseased, and die. But the soul remains the same through all the transformations of physical nature. At the end of a particular body's existence, the soul transmigrates into another body according to its particular desires and activities. The soul is by nature part of God. Its real nourishment, its real satisfaction, is in serving God with love. The essence of all religion is to love Krishna. To love means to repose one's affection exclusively in the object of one's love. Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas, they explained from practical point of view, this means to keep Krishna in the center of our lives. The pleasure of Krishna should be the purpose of all of our relationships with others. When it actually is, there will naturally be peace and harmony. The cause of enmity, quarrel, and hypocrisy is ahankar, putting ourselves in the center, trying to have some position, some prestige, or some facility for material enjoyment. Greed, envy, lust, pride, anger, illusion, these six enemies can only reside within the heart of that person who wants to be the enjoyer, who wants to lord it over material nature. When we put Krishna in the center of our activities, then we only have one position: to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. To put Krishna in the center of activities means we're actually humble, because we understand that all glory, that all the opulences of creation are meant for Krishna. And although this seems to be a consciousness of renunciation, it is actually the only consciousness where we can find the real treasure of the wealth of eternal happiness. And we have seen renunciates like Rupa and Sanatana Goswami exhibiting these qualities. And we have also seen very wealthy, powerful statesmen like Yudhisthira Maharaj, Prataparudra Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, who exhibited this pure state of Krishna-centered consciousness, even while living in palaces, in enormous wealth. But they never considered anything was their own. They considered everything to be the property of Krishna, including their own body, mind, and words. Deity worship, or the process of archana, is one of the very important means by which we could learn how to put Krishna in the center of our lives, both individually and collectively as a society. There we find in the great land of Bharatvarsha all of the great acharyas. They established temples to teach people to put Krishna as the object of their real goal of life. Ramanujacharya, he established his headquarters at Srirangam. Madhvacharya establishes his headquarters around the deity of Udupi Krishna. And all of his followers from all over India worship this Udupi Krishna. Similarly, all of Ramanujacharya's followers from all over, they had the center of their life, Sri Ranganath, in Rangakshetra. And Sripad Shankaracharya, wherever he traveled and preached, he established deities and made that the center of the lives of his disciples. He established Badri Vishal and Badrinath, Rameshwaram, Dwarkadish and Dwarka. His worshipable deity in Puri was Jagannath. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, while living in Puri, he had all of his devotees united in the service of Lord Jagannath. And then he sent Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis to Vrindavan, and one of their missions was to establish temples. Madan Mohan, Radha Govinda Dev, Radha Raman, Radha Gopinath. In Vrindavan today, there is over 5,000 temples. And all the different people of Vrindavan, they have their particular temple that they just focus their society, their life, their family, their everything around that. In the Western world, when they see people of India worshiping the Archa Vigraha, due to poor fund of knowledge, they condemn it as what they call idol worship. Because in the Western world, not understanding the scientific process based on the authority of God's word and scriptures, philosophy, and practical application, people were inventing their own concocted idols, not of God, for the purpose of superstitiously putting curses on others or trying to somehow or other improve their sinful types of lifestyles. And there were so many of these superstitious type of idols. There was no conception of a God. Therefore, the saintly persons of the Western religions, they condemned all these idols and said we should worship the one God. And people condemn Hinduism as being pantheistic. So many gods. And even some Hindi, even some Hindus think that there are so many gods. There may be many gods, but there is one supreme personality of Godhead. And those other gods are just deputed servants of that one supreme personality of Godhead. God is one, the absolute truth. But he has inconceivable potencies, and he can expand, that one God can expand himself in many, many ways, in many forms, to reciprocate with the love of his devotees. And he can descend into this world of envy and suffering according to his own sweet will. When the Lord comes into this world, he comes simply to attract us back to his eternal transcendental pastimes, through his words and through his activities. So the Lord has established himself personally the worship of Archa Vigraha. So many stories there are in our scriptures and in our Vedic histories, where sometimes the Lord, like in Tirupati, he came as Srinivas. He was worshipped by the demigods and the devotees. When his lila was finished, he wanted to go back to Vaikuntha. They said, no, no, please stay. So he manifested his deity form, and then he left. But actually, he didn't leave. He stayed in his deity form so that people would worship him. So the deity is not different than Krishna himself, when properly installed by those who are truly representing the parampara of the highest truths. And why does Krishna come in the form of the Archamurti? So that even with our conditioned senses that cannot see the spiritual essence of life, we could actually see God. Krishna appears. He manifests himself fully within the Murti. We could see him. We could cook for him. We could bathe him. We could dance for him. We could pray for him. We could remember him in the core of our hearts. We could worship him. Therefore, deity worship is so very important, because the nature of people in this world is impersonalism. Because we have so many frustrating relationships with personalities, we try to escape it all through this philosophy of impersonalism. But God is a person, and we can know him as a person only when we approach him as a person and learn to love him and serve him as a person. And deity worship is, although very elaborate in its technical details, it is also very simple. When Srila Prabhupada first came to the West, he taught us a very simple form of deity worship. Then, in order to absorb our minds more and more and more, he gradually explained more sophisticated technical ways of performing the deity worship. But the essence of it is patram pushpam palam toyam yomi bhakta prayashchati. Whatever we offer to Krishna, if it's offered with love and devotion, Krishna accepts it, even if it's just a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or some water. Whatever is within our means, if we just offer it with sincere devotion, Krishna accepts. When he accepts our offering, he is accepting our life. That is our perfection. Krishna is not simply accepting the foodstuff or the flower you're offering. He's accepting your devotion. By accepting your devotion, he's accepting the place that devotion is derived from, which means your heart, which is the sitting place of your soul. He accepts your life as his own. That is the meaning of offering to Krishna. That is the meditation. We are offering our life, our everything, in every little gesture. When I was pujari in America, New Vrindavan, in the early 70s, Srila Prabhupada, we were worshipping Radha Vrindavanath and sometimes Radha Vrindavan Chandra. And Srila Prabhupada sent two Shalagram Shilas. And he said, I am inaugurating Shalagram Shila worship in the West by sending these two Shalagram Shilas to New Vrindavan. And he sent them to myself, who was the pujari. And he sent a little message. He said, to worship Shalagram Shila, he said, you bathe him with water. Then you offer him, you paint a face on him with Gopi Chandan. Then you offer Chandan and Tulsi leaves. First class Shalagram worship means Tulsi leaves. And he said, and you can offer him a dhoti, a chadar, a crown, and a flute. And he said, this very simple worship is all that's required. But if you want to be more elaborate, then you should consult with Janani Vasdas in Mayapur. And he will teach you the higher realms of deity worship. So Srila Prabhupada personally assigned Janani Vas Prabhu as my Shiksha Guru. An instruction I have honored within the core of my heart to this very day. The simplicity of deity worship and how the Lord personally reciprocates with the love of his devotee has been illustrated in many profound histories. I'd like to share one today. In the village of Shikanda in West Bengal, there was a family. In the family, the eldest brother was named Mukunda Das. Hare Krishna. Mukunda Das was a physician, and he actually happened to be the physician for the Shah, or for the ruler of the time. And his younger brother was Narahari Sarakar, very, very great devotee. And Mukunda Das's son's name was Raghunandan Thakur. One time, when all the devotees went to Jagannath Puri to meet Lord Chaitanya, the Lord asked Mukunda Das, here is Raghunandan. Is he your son or is he your father? Now Raghunandan was half his age. But Lord Chaitanya is asking, who is the father and who is the son? And Mukunda Das turned to his son Raghunandan and said, he is my father. How is this? He said, because he has inspired me in the path of devotional service. And Lord Chaitanya was very happy to hear this. He said, yes, this is the truth. One who inspires us on the path of pure bhakti, he is our guru, he is our father. Should I tell you how he inspired his father on the path of devotional service? In their house, they had a deity of Gopinath, Shishirata Gopinath. And every day, Mukunda Das would make offerings to Shirata Gopinath. One day, as the king's physician, he was called for some service. So he told little Raghunandan, who was a small boy, hardly 4 or 5 years old. He said, Raghunanda, he said, today you have to make the Rajbhog offering to Gopinath. Raghunandan said, I do not know how to make Rajbhog offerings. I'm a child. He said, no, no, you must make the offering. It's very simple. Your mother will prepare all the bhoga. She will give you the plate. You bring it and you set it before Gopinath and you just pray to Gopinath to eat and he will eat. So that seemed quite simple. So Raghunandan, he took the plate from his mother and he placed it just in front of Gopinath, the deity, and said, dear Gopinath, please eat. Now there is a great science to deity worship. When you offer with love and devotion, the Lord, through his glance, he sees the bhoga, the food, and he accepts the love and devotion that it is offered with. And then it becomes Mahaprasad. So the Lord glanced upon the food and tasted all the nectarine love of the cooking of his mother and the offering of little Raghunandan and the intention of the father, Mukunda Das, and it became Mahaprasad. But Raghunandan began to cry. And he stood there, crying. And then he begged again, Gopinath, please, please, eat. I know I'm a fallen soul. I know I have no love, but my father asked you to eat, so please eat. After repeated appeals, Gopinath finally spoke to Raghunandan. He said, I already ate. He said, what do you mean you already ate? All the food is here. He said, no, I took with my eyes, I have tasted the nectar of your devotion, and now it is all Mahaprasad. Raghunandan said, I'm just a small child. I don't know all these glancing philosophies. All I know is my father told me to give you to eat, and the food's still there. Please eat. He was crying. Ah. So Gopinath, just to satisfy him, he came down from the altar, and with his hand, he put the food in his mouth and ate everything. Now, this took a long time. So Raghunandan's mother, she was waiting. What's taking so long? Offering's not supposed to take this long. So then the small chap came off with an empty plate. And naturally, what is a mother to think? What has been done? My son, he ate all the food right on the altar of Thakurji Bhagavan Sri Gopinath. This is too much. But she didn't say anything. She asked him. Asked him one thing. She said, what happened to the food? And Raghunandan said, Gopinath ate it. So she didn't pursue this subject. After some time, Mukunda Das returned. And after a hard day's work, he said to his wife, please give me prasad. She said, today there is no prasad. Why is there no prasad? You should ask your son, Raghunandan. He came up, I filled up the plate so much, and he came off empty. So Mukunda asked Raghunandan, dear child, please tell me, where's the prasad? He said, Gopinath ate it. Please tell me everything. So he explained how he offered it, and Gopinath told him all this high philosophy, and he started crying and crying, and finally Gopinath came down and ate it. So father said, I want you to offer this one laddu. And I'm going out again for some business. So Mukunda left the house, and Raghunandan went onto the altar with one big, nice laddu. And he said, "Gopinath, please eat." And Gopinath glanced. And then Raghunandan started crying, "Please, Gopinath, eat, eat, eat." And then he actually picked up the laddu and put it right in Gopinath's hand and said, "Please eat." So Gopinath took one bite out of the laddu, then another bite. He ate half the laddu. Meanwhile, Mukunda Das, the father, snuck back into the house and was watching right at the door of the altar. And Raghunandan saw his father. And as soon as Raghunandan saw his father, Gopinath did not eat anymore. And do you want to know something? Today in Srikhanda, that half laddu is still there. It is worshipped by devotees who go. They have preserved it. So then it was confirmed what kind of pure devotion this little boy Raghunandan Thakur had. Now there was another great Vaishnav. His name was Abhiram Thakur. He was incarnation of Sri Dama, the brother of Sri Radharani in Krishna's Leela. And Abhiram Thakur, he was very powerful. He was so powerful that if he offered obeisances to any stone that was not a shalagram, it would crack into pieces. And if he offered obeisances to any person, if that person had even the slightest tinge of material desire in his heart, that person would immediately die. So he didn't offer his obeisances to too many people. But when he heard about Raghunandan, this little boy who Gopinath was eating the food physically, he became so ecstatic, so impressed. He announced publicly, "I'm going to Srikhanda to offer obeisances to this great soul." When the word came to Raghunandan's mother and father, they were terrified. "Our little Raghu, he's just a small child. When we don't feed him, he cries. He's a little boy. Parents do not see their children as great saints, whoever they are." So they were thinking, what if there's even a particle of material desire in his heart? He will die. So they were in great perplexity. Meanwhile, Abhiram Thakur was coming closer and closer and closer. When he was in the outskirts of Srikhanda, as a desperate attempt to save their child, they hid him just outside of the village at some friend's house. And then Abhiram Thakur arrived at their home. They came to the door. "I have come to see Raghunandan, your son." They said, "He's not home." I said, "Well, where is he?" "He went out of town." They were telling the truth. So he decided he would wait until he returned home. So he went into a beautiful forest of banyan trees. And he sat there with his japa mala, intensely meditating on Krishna by chanting the holy names. Meanwhile, little Raghunandan heard that a great Vaishnav, Abhiram Thakur, was in town and he wanted to see. So he escaped that neighbor's house and came running to that forest of banyan trees. And there he saw Abhiram Thakur sitting and chanting. And he ran with tears of love in his eyes and offered his dandavat obeisances to Abhiram Thakur. Abhiram asked, "Who are you?" He said, "My name is Raghunandan." So Abhiram Thakur bowed down to this small 5-year-old child, full prostrated obeisances. And Raghunandan Thakur survived. That means He was tested and proved to have had not even the slightest tinge of selfish desire in his heart. The only thing there was pure, unalloyed love for Krishna. As they both bowed down to each other when they got up, they were so filled with love for Krishna and love for each other. This great Acharya and this little boy began to embrace together. As they were embracing, the tears from their eyes were flooding. They were soaking each other with tears. Then they began to dance together, loudly chanting the holy name. They danced and they danced and they danced. Raghunandan had an ankle bell called Nupur on his ankle, and he danced so enthusiastically that the ankle bell broke and flew in the air 4 miles away. And in commemoration of that pastime, the exact place where that ankle bell fell, they excavated a kund, and it is called Nupur Kund. And today, hundreds and thousands of people go there every year to worship that place and remember the love and devotion of Raghunandan Thakur. So he became the pujari of Radha Gopinath and Srikanda. As the pujari, he was dedicated to worshiping the deity with such simple and pure love and devotion. One time Lord Chaitanya came to Srikanda with Lord Nityananda, and he told Raghunandan's uncle, Narahari Sarakar, please give me honey. I want to drink madhu. So there was no honey anywhere around. So just by Narahari Sarakar's desire, there was a lake just outside of his house, and the whole lake turned into honey. And that became known as Madhu Kund. And Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya drank that honey. And just on the bank of that lake was a kadamba tree. And every day, Krishna, Lord Gopinath, just to fulfill his desires of his devotees, 2 beautiful kadamba flowers, fully blossomed, were on that tree 365 days a year, so that Raghunandan, with love and devotion, could offer them to the deity of Gopinath. When Raghunandan grew up, he was still pujari. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told these 3 great celebrated personalities of Srikanda very specific instructions. He told Mukunda Das, you are a doctor, you have a family, you have a wife and children. You should earn both material and spiritual wealth. In other words, you stay home, you follow your occupational duties, but you center your life around devotion to Krishna. In this way, you will attain the supreme perfection. There's no need to renounce the world. You just renounce selfish egoism. So Mukunda Das remained home, continued his profession, and earned material and spiritual wealth. He told Narahari Sarakar, you should preach this message and live amongst the devotees. And he told Raghunandan, you should worship the Lord in the temple with great love and devotion. So, the Lord in the form of the deity, he appears simply to give us a chance to serve him and to love him. Srila Prabhupada explained, when you decorate the deity, you decorate your own heart with devotion. When you feed the deity, you nourish your heart with bhakti. In fact, when you decorate the deity very nicely, you're so satisfied to see Krishna with all opulences that you're detached from any opulences for yourself. No matter how much we give ourselves, we need more. But when we offer to Krishna and see He's satisfied, then we attain complete fulfillment of all of our desires. So our beloved Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, he established beautiful deities of Radha and Krishna, Gaur Nitai, all over the world, where people come from all different places to learn the art of personal service to the Supreme Lord, personal meditation on the form of the Lord through the deity. And today's festival, Pushyabhishek, is a very wonderful experience for everyone who participates. All day long today, there were hundreds of people filling every part of the temple, working together in perfect unity, developing the most intimate, spiritually centered relationships, making arrangements for Radha Gopinath's pleasure. So many flower petals, so many flower ornaments, flower dresses were being made. And this is actual society. So many people just took off from their work, took off from their household duties to come together, some even bringing their children in perfect unity to offer services to the Lord. This is a festival that we have only one evening every year. It's a festival where people find such joy, incredible joy, just watching Radharani and Lord Gopinath enjoying. It's no greater pleasure. You can go to the cinema houses here in Bollywood and you can see all kinds of exciting scenes. And it will, maybe you'll laugh or maybe you'll cry or maybe you'll be terrified, whatever particular movie you're watching. Or maybe your senses will go out of control. So it can do so much to your mind and to your senses. But it does not touch the heart. It does not touch the soul. But when we see the beautiful pastimes of the Lord accepting the love of His devotees, this penetrates and gives deep satisfaction to the very soul and detaches us from the egoistic pursuits of life. So we come to this festival to purify our hearts by seeing the beautiful celebration of Sri Radha and Gopinath enjoying the offerings of love of everyone. Through our singing, through our dancing, through our offerings of flowers and bhoga, we are engaging in the eternal activities of the spiritual world. Right here in Bombay. I'm sorry, Mumbai. Forgive my offense. How is this possible? When devotees are gathered around the deity making a wonderful celebration for them, that place is transformed into Goloka Vrindavan. Just like in government, where there's an embassy, the embassy is actually under the laws of the country that it's from. If you go to the American embassy in Delhi, once you go in that compound, you're under American law. You're not in India anymore. So when devotees worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His temple by offering Him loving service, and chanting his holy names. That place is under the laws of the spiritual world. There's only one law in this spiritual world, the law of love, of pure, unalloyed, ecstatic love. And that is what we are about to witness this evening. Thank you very much.